Thank you for joining us this morning. You're listening to 88.7 WHCL-FM, Clinton, New York. My guest this morning is Mikhail Friedman, and he's joining us from Vermont to speak to us about thyroid. So, welcome.
Good morning.
And could you tell us a little bit about your practice and where it is and what you guys do?
Well, I'm a naturopathic physician, and I graduated in 98, and I'm licensed as a primary care physician in the state of Vermont, and but currently I run a company which puts on medical conferences and supplements and herbal medicines for focusing mostly on the thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's we're located in Vermont, and that's mostly what I'm up to right now. And I could do some lecturing as well.
And what function does the thyroid play in our bodies?
The thyroid is a gland which is, you know, right above the neck, and it produces thyroid hormones, which helps regulate metabolism. All the cells in our body need these hormones, which are produced by the thyroid, to stimulate metabolism. So if someone has a lot of thyroid hormones and the person has an illness where someone becomes hyperthyroid, the person will end up having too many thyroid hormones, and this will cause people to have too much high metabolism, and if untreated, you know, it can lead to a heart attack and death. And if someone is hypothyroid and the thyroid is not producing enough hormones, the metabolic rate goes so low that you can have all these other complications, the main one being just extreme fatigue and debilitation and weight gain, depression and anxiety. And eventually, if the metabolism goes so low, the cholesterol levels go high enough that people can, and it also, the heart will have a hard time keeping up because it doesn't have enough hormones to stimulate it. So you can also get a heart attack that way as well.
Hmm.
So either way, it's a problem. Thyroid is a gland, but it's a whole system. The thyroid system is not just in the thyroid gland, surprisingly. People usually just think of thyroid hormones coming from the thyroid gland, but that's not really correct. The thyroid actually produces produces T4, but T4 is not the main active thyroid hormone. It's actually T3, and that majority of that thyroid hormone actually is secreted and converted in the liver and the kidneys to the active hormone T3. So looking at it from a holistic perspective, treating the thyroid system is not just looking at the thyroid, but also make sure that the liver is working well and the kidneys are working well and all the conversion factors are in place to have the optimum amount of T3 levels.
So what are some signs that a person may experience that would indicate they may have an improper thyroid function?
Most people who have thyroid problems tend to be hypothyroid. Although there are some hyperthyroid people, you know, like some famous people would be like George Bush Senior and his wife. but in general, someone is hypothyroid. So the main symptom would be just fatigue. Everything just seems too much work, to, you know, just walking around, and it just fatigue, and probably weight gain is the second one. So fatigue and weight gain are, and it's usually mostly common in women for some reason. It's much more common in women than men, although it does exist in men. But I would say fatigue, also intolerance to cold, feeling cold often, that's pretty common. But hair loss, depression, anxiety, muscle aches. You can even get unusual symptoms such as carpal tunnel syndrome can be attributed to hypothyroidism.
And are the symptoms different for hyperthyroidism?
And the hyperthyroid, someone will be too hot instead of too cold. The their body temperature might be running around 99 instead of hypothyroid patients can run around 96. So if they're too hot, they'll be 90, and they tend to be very thin, and although I have seen overweight Graves patients hyperthyroid, but most people tend to be thin, and they can be tired, But heart palpitations is probably the first symptom which they'll have. Is they'll notice their heart and they'll run a little too fast. Sometimes high blood pressure. But the fatigue will also be there, and anxiety, intense anxiety, because your thyroid hormones are so high that it's really hard to stay calm.
And how can someone differentiate? I mean, is the body temperature a way to help you figure that you have a thyroid problem? I mean, how do you not attribute these to other things, such as the anxiety or maybe some of those other symptoms?
Well, for a clinically diagnosable thyroid problem, as in, you know, when someone has the clear onset of an illness, it's a simple way to differentiate it is just a blood test. So you can just order a TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, and if the TSH is high, it usually means the person's hypothyroid, and if it's low, the person tends to be hyperthyroid.
And is there different times in the day that these thyroid levels would be different? So is there a certain time of the day that they take the thyroid levels to?
Now, for this test, the TSH, you can take it any time. I mean, there are some things, some hormones, which really are very circadian, where they go up and down throughout the day, specifically cortisol as an example, but thyroid hormones is pretty consistent throughout the day. There's nothing that's different that you would need to take it at a specific time. You can take it any time when you order that test.
Is there anything in particular that causes thyroid problems for people? Any thing that people would be exposed to that would put them at risk of having a thyroid problem?
That's a good question, and there's a long answer to that one. But thyroid disease, if you look at the pathology textbook on thyroid disease for hypothyroidism, in the textbooks from a long time ago, before I was born, like in the 1950s, 1960s, it talks about hypothyroidism as a very rare condition, not really found in medical practice and in family practice. But now it's very, very common. It's about 25% of women now will actually have some form of thyroid problems with some traceable antibodies to their thyroid. 25%. That's huge. It's so common that you can ask, like if I have a patient of mine who forgot their or run out of the prescription for T4 or for, you know, thyroid hormones, I just tell them that, you know, ask their mother-in-law, ask their sister, you know, ask their daughter. Someone's got it in the family because it's so common, and almost always they do have someone who has a few spare hormones. Even the dogs. I mean, a lot of dogs will become hypothyroid too. Cats become hyperthyroid. I think it's like 25% of all adult dogs will eventually become hypothyroid. And cats will eventually become hyperthyroid as well. And I don't think that's a natural state we should, which naturally occurs. I think it happens for animals. I think it's the pet food. People, you know, if they're not, I don't think that really occurs if the pets are eating normal, natural foods, but all the canned food with all the chemicals that can definitely affect the thyroid. And in humans, there's environmental factors with what we eat, what chemicals we ingest, and so the most common one is, which people take a lot of nowadays, is fluorine. Fluorine is in our water, it's in our toothpaste, chlorine. Chlorine is actually in our water as well. And these are all halogens. Halogens have a certain molecular weight on the elemental table, and those halogens include bromine, chlorine, fluorine, and iodine. And iodine is very essential for thyroid function. It's the ingredient which makes thyroid hormones. And iodine gets displaced by halogens such as bromine, chlorine, and fluorine. So our current diet is saturated with bromine, chlorine, and fluorine.
Mm-hmm.
And that displaces the iodine, so that is a big trigger. It's huge. And I've actually heard of a case where someone became hypothyroid temporarily, who was a teenager, which is rare.
Uh-huh.
A teenager, and it was caused by someone drinking Mountain Dew.
Wow.
They were drinking Mountain Dew every day, and one of the ingredients of Mountain Dew is they put hydrogenated oil, which isn't good, but they brominate it, so it's brominated hydrogenated oil. So someone was drinking a few of those every day.
Uh-huh.
They're down in all this bromine, hydrogenated bromine, and that was enough for someone to become a hypothyroid state. And after they stopped the Mountain Dew, they went back to normal. But the problem is, so many people are drinking all these kind of chemicals every day,
uh-huh.
and eventually it's too much on the system. And also, people are not taking enough iodine. That's the other thing, because iodine used to be found in seaweed and seafoods and naturally in the soil, but it's pretty depleted now.
Uh-huh.
So you have to take one thing which people can take is taking iodine. I think iodine could be very helpful, found in seaweed or just as a capsule or as a tablet. I think that's a good preventative. And it also, the iodine, just as bromine displaces the iodine,
mm-hmm.
So does iodine displace these other chemicals.
Mm.
So if you take iodine, it'll take out of your system some of these other halogens.
Oh, interesting.
Bromine is found in sauna, in jacuzzi tubs. It's found in flower conditioners, chlorine. Even when someone's taking a shower in city water, when you breathe in that chlorine smell, it goes in your body.
Mm.
So all those things, those are chemicals. And there's all the pesticides and all those things which have been attributed to hypothyroidism as well.
So does the water also pass through the skin or comes through the lungs or both in the shower
situation? It does get absorbed through the skin and also through the lungs when you're breathing the vapors.
Mm-hmm. And there's oil in Mountain Dew?
Hydrogenated oil.
Strange. I can't imagine.
It's hydrogenated oil, which is brominated.
Wow.
But even like, I think even like Orange Crush has hydrogenated oil. A lot of the sodas has a lot of crazy stuff in there.
Hmm. So, is there other foods that people should be avoiding besides the, well, so far we've got water, sunflowers, soda?
Water, filtered water. I want people to drink water. I'm not saying people should avoid water. But they should, you know, try to get their water, if it has chlorinated, to filter it, get a filter.
Uh-huh.
And avoid foods which have a lot of these chemicals in it, particularly sodas, which have bromine in it. But just eating actually just a more traditional diet where, you know, we're eating whole foods,
mm-hmm.
and not processed food in general is better. And eating organic, I think eating foods which are not sprayed with pesticides, I think all these chemicals really creates a burden on the person's health.
Just as a side note, do you prescribe to your patients to avoid genetically engineered foods?
In general, I recommend all my patients to eat organic food, which means that it's not genetically modified.
Right.
You know, I would think I avoid genetically modified food. Yeah. You know, I'm not sure if that you can make a direct link between that and thyroid problems, but I would say I wouldn't be surprised that people are going to have more food allergies to things which they're not used to, such as genetically modified corn or something like that.
Right. What types of water filter would you recommend that could remove the fluorine from the water?
I mean, I don't really have any particularly brand recommendations. I mean, whatever's at the health food store, you know, anything which claims it takes out chlorine and fluorine is fine with me.
Okay. I just heard it's difficult to remove fluorine from the water, and I didn't know if there was a special distillation process or reverse osmosis or...
Reverse osmosis is probably, like, the most sophisticated. But I know getting rid of chlorine is pretty easy with even just like a regular, you know, $40 Brita filter.
Mm-hmm. And then another question I would have about the chlorine is that I heard it was easy to get rid of chlorine, but then our water board, I think, as recently as a few years ago, added some type of ammonia gas into the water supply so that the chlorine would stay molecularly stable in the water so it wouldn't dissipate
as quickly.
Right.
And so now, you know, only drinking chlorine, but drinking ammonia.
I guess it's some type of an... Well, I called and asked them about it because if you combine chlorine and ammonia, then it creates a poisonous gas, but they said that the way that they've done it, it doesn't cause such a problem.
Right. I'd still be suspicious of it. You know, I'd still get a water filter.
So, okay, I just wondered if that took additional technology to remove the chlorine in that circumstance.
You know, that's a good question. I wouldn't know, but in general, like, these carbon filters usually does remove most of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I would probably say it probably would, but I'd have to look. We'd have to look into it to know exactly.
So for patients who would be taking iodine, can they take it in the form of a liquid?
You can take iodine in the form of a liquid in a capsule, a tablet, or you can take it in the form of food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seaweed, if you eat a lot of seaweed, we have to eat a lot of seaweed, like at least 5 grams a day, to get the kind of iodine we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
or you can get a liquid. The liquid iodine normally is you can get as a prescription called Lugol solution,
mm-hmm.
or you can get as a capsule. I recommend around 4 or 5 milligrams a day.
And with the Lugol's, could you just get that at a pharmacy, or do you have to go someplace special to a health food store?
I think it's a prescription.
Okay.
But I have seen some health food stores which have iodine drops, which is not a prescription, so you could also use that.
Mm-hmm.
The dosage I usually recommend is around 4 milligrams. But the one thing to recognize is that iodine can cause problems as well. So, you know, it can sometimes it aggravates thyroid antibody levels. I have seen that. And sometimes people can get heart palpitations, especially in a higher dose, like 50 milligrams. But in general, I think 3-4 milligrams is pretty safe for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And now that you mentioned that, is it safer to be doing something like the seaweed versus the iodine, or it's just you need to be sure you're controlling your iodine level?
It's safe either way, in general. I mean, you know, some people have eaten so much seaweed, in Japan, they get palpitations as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you don't want to take so much that it causes heart palpitations.
Mm-hmm. So what traditionally did our ancestors do for iodine in their diet, or people who weren't close to the sea?
Well, a lot of actually people traditionally were iodine deficient.
Oh.
There was a lot of goiters, there was a lot of thyroid problems. And it was called the goiter belt, the belt where there wasn't much iodine in the soil, and those people who had no access to iodine through their soil, there tended to be non-optimal levels. But it didn't mean it was, I mean, not everybody had thyroid problems, but in general, those people tend to have not enough iodine. There's iodine in the soil, there's just not as much.
Mm-hmm.
Especially nowadays, I think the soil's somewhat depleted for a lot of these minerals.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask the listening audience if you have a question here for the doctor. You can give us a call. The number here is 859-4200. That's 315-859-4200. What about using organ meats? Would that be a source of iodine for people?
Hmm. Organ meats and iodine. That's I'm sure the thyroid have a lot of it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I would think there'd be some.
So, in your practice, what types of herbs do you use for thyroid function?
Well, it depends if someone's hyper or hypo. Mm-hmm. So if someone's hyper, I normally use herbs with like lemon balm, bugleweed, rosemary, salvia, skullcap. If someone's hypothyroid, I tend to use a lot of blue flag, which grows out here in the Northeast. Mm-hmm. I also use the root of it. I also use the resin from certain trees, like myrrh tree, mm-hmm. and seaweed.
Mm-hmm. Now, do any of your patients use something like Synthroid, or what are the...
Yeah, Synthroid is just a brand name of a thyroid hormone, T4. So it's this level of thyroxine. It's just a brand name. But Synthroid is taken when someone's not producing enough thyroid hormones, and if they're being treated in their naturally and they can't produce enough on their own, then they should take some thyroid hormones. Some of my patients will take Synthroid, or some of them will take T4 and T3, and I'll mix it up accordingly to however I think it's appropriate. T3 is the active hormone, so a lot of people on T4 feel okay, but not everyone feels well on T4. A lot of people who are on Synthroid still feel tired and fatigued.
Hmm. And so is there any caution that you use when using Synthroid, or that synthetic thyroid hormone?
I'd say my only caution would be that it's not usually. My only caution is if the person is on it and they still feel tired, mm-hmm. and they still have some weight gain, then it's appropriate to look at other thyroid hormones as well.
Mm-hmm. So,
but it's a hormone that which is bioidentical to what the body naturally produces, so it's pretty benign. It's not a drug which really has many side. It virtually has no side effects when taken appropriately.
Mm-hmm. And in your practice, you usually recommend. What's the first thing you would recommend to someone who's having a thyroid problem for correction?
Well, it first depends if they're hyper or hypo. If they're hyper. Then I'd do the herbs right away and also give some cardiac support to make sure they don't get too many heart palpitations. Mm-hmm. If they're hypo, I would give them, I would put them on herbs and iodine and see how they respond, and then do blood tests in them in about 2 or 3 weeks. And if we can't get it back to normal level of thyroid hormone production, mm-hmm. Then I would put them on thyroid hormones. And I usually put them on T3 or maybe some T3 and T4.
Mm-hmm.
Again, T4 is Synthroid, and T3 is the active hormone, which gets converted from the thyroid, and it gets converted in the liver, kidneys, to the active hormone.
Mm-hmm. And so how does the thyroid affect all the other organs in the body? You mentioned a few times the liver and kidneys in connection.
Well, liver and kidneys convert to thyroid hormones, the more we learn about endocrinology, the more we realize it's much more than just the liver and the kidneys. They're finding tissues throughout the body convert thyroid hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Even the pituitary gland in the brain converts T4 to T3. Fat tissue converts T4 to T3. So, you know, there's brown adipose tissue, pituitary gland, liver, kidney, all have been shown to convert thyroid hormones. And then, of course, then there's the effect of what does the thyroid hormones affect the tissues and other organs of the body. So, one of the main things, I'd say there's two organs which are really affected by thyroid function. One is the adrenals, and one is the heart.
Hmm.
Those are the two ones. So when someone's hyperthyroid or hypothyroid, it's a strain on the heart and the adrenals.
Hmm. And so when it strains the adrenals, that causes the fatigue?
It can compound the fatigue. I mean, the fatigue can be there regardless if the adrenals are fine or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not producing the thyroid hormones, you're going to be fatigued no matter what. But it can aggravate the health of the kidney, the adrenals, and that can cause more fatigue on top of that. So that's why sometimes people who have thyroid problems, it's even if they're on thyroid hormones, they still might feel fatigued. And one thing you can support is support the adrenal glands with herbs and sometimes hormones.
When you spoke about the endocrine, how does the thyroid affect endocrine system or glands? I'm not even too familiar with what endocrine refers to.
Endocrine is a system of the body which has all these. It is a system of the body in which all any glandular any tissue in the body which produces hormones which goes into the bloodstream.
Okay.
So that would be the thyroid, the pancreas, the adrenals, the pituitary, et cetera, it's ovaries.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the endocrine system.
I see. And does something like a birth control pill affect thyroid function? Because that's a hormone-related thing?
It can in the sense that high levels of estrogen can increase the binding of thyroid hormones in the blood.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, I'd say no.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of thyroid function.
And so the thyroid, besides metabolism, is there other things that it's working upon? I mean, when it gets converted by fat, what effect does it have at that point?
When it gets converted from T4 to T3, it helps metabolize fat.
Oh, it helps?
So metabolism is when you're saying to do just anything more than just metabolism, the answer is no. It only regulates metabolism, but metabolism is huge. So if you're not... it affects metabolizing fats, metabolizing your whole body temperature, metabolizing production of energy molecules in the body, metabolizing energy for your heart can pump. So it's crucial. Like, if you have no thyroid hormones, you don't exist.
So it's kind of controlling the speed that everything's taking place at your body, in your body.
Yep.
So all these different processes.
Yep, it's a very important gland.
Sounds like it. Well, is there anything else that you do at your practice that you'd like to let the audience know about?
Well, I would say with the for the thyroid, like what I mentioned before, is the for hyperthyroid, most people end up becoming irradiated with regular medicine,
mm-hmm.
And then they have the thyroid is completely destroyed,
mm-hmm.
and they have to take Synthroid the rest of their life. And in general, I would say that can be avoided with natural medicine.
Mm.
That's one thing where herbal medicine really excels. It really can. I have seen it where it really can stop someone from becoming hypothyroid and eventually preventing someone needing radioactive iodine. So another thing is a lot of times people can have thyroid symptoms even when their blood tests are normal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a condition where it's not as advanced,
mm-hmm.
But it's still enough that someone can have a lot of symptoms. So what I do for that is I just ask people to track their body temperature. And people's body temperature is going down. In general, people's body temperature used to be 98.6 on average, but now it's around 97.8.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a... Also, like sperm count has gone down. So these are just things which have gone down in the modern world. And when someone's body temperature is down for a long time, the metabolic rate goes down. So all the enzymes and chemicals in the body work less well at that temperature. So, which means that people will feel more can have a lot of symptoms even if their blood tests are normal. So I ask people to track their body temperature. And if their body temperature tends to be low, and if they have symptoms of low metabolism, such as fatigue and weight gain and depression, headaches are all pretty common symptoms, then I'll treat them even if their blood tests are normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll treat them with herbs or even active thyroid hormones, such as T3.
There's another doctor that I saw who was interviewed talking about people having lower body temperatures, and that's not a... You can have a lot of problems for having a lower body temperature.
Yeah, who were you talking to?
This was a radio program that I was listening to, and I think his name is John Apsley.
Okay. Yeah, it's totally true. Low body temperature definitely can... It's actually called Wilson's Temperature Syndrome. This doctor, Dennis Wilson, a medical doctor in Florida, treated a few thousand patients with a certain protocol using thyroid hormones to increase people's body temperature, and noticed a lot of people felt a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So it became something called Wilson's Temperature Syndrome, which is low body temperature with symptoms. And the treatment for that is you can use herbs, or you can use hormones to help increase the metabolic rate. And a lot of people's symptoms would get better or even normalize after doing this, and they'd feel a lot better. So there's a lot of doctors who do this kind of treatment, including myself. I've done a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. I think I heard from Susan Weed that a woman had gotten the thyroid iodine irradiation to kill off her thyroid.
Right.
And then after she had had that, then she became hypothyroid.
Right, because you destroy the tissue.
And
whenever you destroy tissue, then the tissue's not working and it's not producing things, so it's going to become hypothyroid. So someone who gets radioactive iodine will always become hypothyroid.
And I believe that she said that the woman was then treated with stinging nettle and actually regenerated the damaged tissue within her thyroid.
You mean stinging nettle internally?
Yes.
That'd be great. I could imagine that. I mean, I haven't seen that patient, so I don't know. But I use nettles for hypothyroidism, so I could see it being helped. If the person had done that, then maybe the radioactive iodine, they had taken just a small amount, which didn't totally destroy the whole tissue.
And I think that was what it was, is that it was to partially damage her thyroid,
yeah.
But then she had a lowered... Her function went too low, and
right.
The nettle caused the cellular regeneration.
Yeah, that's great.
And the... actually, the doctor who mentioned the low body temperature is John Apsley, and his interview was about cellular regeneration,
mm-hmm.
but not the same.
Right.
Not about nettles.
Right. No, nettles are great. Grows right here, too. You can go pick them up.
Mm-hmm.
Make tea out of it.
Anything that I didn't ask you that you would like to speak about?
No, I can't think of anything.
Okay, so I guess we covered it all. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
All right, great.
And we talked...
Playing some tunes right now?
Yes, and maybe I'll see you at the International Herbal Symposium.
All right, I'll see you there.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.